Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Hello and welcome to the show. This is Jim Dolan. Today we're going to visit with Brian Donlevy as a secret agent working for a secret worldwide agency on a program called Dangerous Assignment, the Bronx Nazi Buzz Bomb from 1951.
Dangerous Assignment, starring Brian Donlevy as Steve Mitchell.
Yeah, danger is my assignment. I get sent to a lot of places I can't even pronounce. They all spell the same thing, though, trouble. But when I walk into the commissioner's office, I don't realize this assignment's gonna end up with a guy I'm looking for shoving a gun in my back and me doing my best to help him. Morning, Commissioner. Ruth said you had an assignment for me.
I do, Steve.
Well, where do I go this time?
I'm not sure.
You're not... Let's have that again.
You heard me. I'm not sure.
Okay. So what do I do when I get there?
I don't know.
Now, wait a minute. You're not sure where I'm going. You don't know what I'm supposed to do when I get there. Well, okay. If you want to play 20 questions, is it animal, vegetable, or mineral?
Mineral. And I'll save you the other 19 questions by telling you it's a buzz bomb.
Buzz bomb?
Steve, I'm sure you remember how proficient the Nazis were in the last war with buzz bombs.
Yeah. As I remember, they sure remodeled the London skyline with them.
That's right. Perhaps you also remember that we had strong indications that the Nazis had a complete set of plans for a new buzz bomb. One which apparently is equal or superior to the guided missiles we're working on right now. Those plans disappeared, and we've had no line on them whatsoever up until last night.
What happened last night?
Well, sometime one of our agents in Berlin has been on the trail of a man he was convinced was involved. Last night, in an alley, he finally found the man with a knife in his back.
So now we don't have any more line on it than before.
Well, I wouldn't say that. You see, the dying man lasted long enough to admit that he and a friend of his had stolen the plans around the time of the fall of Berlin.
Did he say who his friend was?
A man named Froelich, who brought them to this country right afterward. Their scheme was to sell to the highest bidder, but the dying man hadn't heard from Froelich since he came to the States 5 years ago.
5 years ago? Well, why hasn't Froelich tried to peddle the plans before now, then?
We don't know. That's what I want you to find out after you find Froelich. And, Steve, remember that whoever killed Froelich's partner in Berlin knows as much about it as we do. That means from now on it's going to be a race. Every minute counts double. Get on it, Steve. Locate Froelich wherever he is. And above all, bring back the data on that buzz bomb. Yeah? That's it. You've got your assignment. Good luck.
National Broadcasting Company is presenting Dangerous Assignment, starring Brian Donlevy as Steve Mitchell, colorful two-fisted government agent. At all those places of the world where danger and intrigue walk hand in hand, there you'll find Steve Mitchell on another Dangerous Assignment.
Sure, I've got my assignment. Just a simple matter of locating a guy named Froelich who came to this country almost 5 years ago and getting some buzz bomb plans away from him. On the surface, it sounds just dandy, but there are a couple of little things that occur to me real quick. In the first place, Froelich obviously doesn't want to be found. And in the second place, there's already been one murder committed over those plans. That means I've got to try to prevent the second one, namely my own. I head for the immigration office and start checking their files. 5 hours later, I find a record of Froelich docking at New York, May 13th, 1946. I head for New York to follow it up. The local office digs out the file for me, and I find that Froelich listed as his next of kin a cousin named Julia Sachs in the Bronx. I copy down the address and go over.
Yeah?
Julia Sachs?
Yeah.
Hey, what happened to you? Your face looks like you'd tangled with a meat grinder.
What a fair set of yours. Who are you?
Hey, you better take a look at my credentials.
I see. Come in, please. Now then, what can I do for you, Mr. Mitchell?
I'd like to talk to your cousin.
My cousin?
Yeah, Frelick.
But I'm afraid you're much too late for that.
You mean he skipped town?
No, I mean Frelick has been dead for almost 5 years.
What?
Yeah. He was killed in a traffic accident the day after his boat docked from Europe.
Oh, great. There goes my one lead.
Uh-huh.
Oh, skip it. Look, did Frelick ever mention anything to you about any valuable papers he had?
No. You know, it's strange that you two should ask this question.
What do you mean, me too?
You observe the condition of my face. Well, last night I was almost beaten to death. My cries for help drove my attacker away and saved my life.
Who was he?
I do not know. I've never seen him before. A man with bulging eyes. He kept asking me strange questions about Frelick's papers. Questions which I was unable to answer.
Brother, they're sure not losing any time. Hey, look, Frelick must have brought some luggage with him.
Yeah, a trunk. I kept it in the attic for some time.
You still have it?
No. Last month I cleaned out the attic. When I came to the trunk, I realized I'd misplaced the key. So I sold the trunk.
To whom?
A junk dealer.
Oh, fine. Great chance I'll have of finding it now.
What could be so valuable about Frelick's trunk? It was empty.
You sure about that?
Of course. Frelick unpacked all of his clothes as soon as he arrived.
What did you do with his clothes after he was killed?
Oh, I gave them away.
Well, that settles that. Of course, those papers would be too bulky to hide them in clothing anyway.
What papers are these that everybody is suddenly so interested in?
Oh, skip it. Look, Julius, do you remember which junk dealer you sold the trunk to?
Oh, yeah. I copy his address down if you like.
I like. Remember what the trunk looked like?
Well, let me see. It had a rounded top, as I remember, and brass bands.
Not much to go on, but I'll give it a whirl.
Mr. Mitchell, I still do not understand why this trunk is so important to you.
Maybe it isn't, Julius, but I won't know until I find it.
But this junk dealer, he's undoubtedly sold the trunk by now. And to find one trunk in a city as large as New York...
Yeah, I know, Julius. If I ever bet with odds that heavy against me at the racetrack, I'd be on relief.
Trunks, trunks. Have I got trunks, he asks. Mister, does a fish have scales? Come with me.
Huh? Hey, where are we going?
To the back room here. You're gonna see trunks. There.
Oh, no. At least 50 of them.
52, friend. Take your pick. $2 each. $3 with keys.
Look, the one I'm interested in, you bought about a month ago from a guy named Julius Sachs. You haven't remembered?
Mister, in my business, it's not the names that count. It's the merchandise. Sachs, Schmacks.
Well, this merchandise had a rounded cover and brass bands.
Oh, an old baby, huh?
Yeah.
I don't know. I get a lot like it with it. Hey, wait a minute.
You remember it?
Hey, it seems to me I sold a trunk like that about 3 weeks ago. Yeah, I remember now. I had a couple of keys made for it, and I sold it to a doll down in Greenwich Village. Let's see, Alice Chambers.
I thought you didn't remember names.
Hey, mister, you see her, you'll remember her name, too.
You happen to know where she lives in the village?
A rooming house, I think she said.
Uh-huh, okay. Thanks.
Hey, wait a minute.
Hey, what's the matter?
So you come in here asking about trunks. I give you a good price, $2, $3 with keys. And all you're fishing for is a doll's address. Hey, you know, this sort of thing does not help me further my career.
Okay, career boy. Here's $5. Have a couple of trunks on me.
With keys?
Yeah, here's another buck with keys. So I head for Greenwich Village. I know what I'm following is strictly a hunch, and I'm just hoping the hunch doesn't turn into a wild goose tish. Steve Mitchell, government agent, shagging around New York after a beat-up, second-hand trunk yet. When I get to the village, the usual array of characters are floating around. A gent on the curb carving statues out of soap. A guy with hair down to his shoulders sawing away at a fiddle. The works. I nose around inquiring about Alice Chambers. Finally, I learn that her rooming house is just around the corner. I turn the corner. Then I spot a crowd in front of the doorway with a couple of cops pushing them back. On the edge of the crowd stands a tall, skinny gent wearing a long black beard and a long white toga.
She looked awful. She looked terrible.
Excuse me, I'd like to get by.
Ah, my friend, you disappoint me.
Huh?
As I watched you approach, I thought, here is a man of character.
Surely he will not stoop to this. Yet here you are, yielding to the same morbid curiosity which is the common denominator of the ignoramuses which our crass and materialistic culture spews forth upon our sidewalks in ever-increasing multitudes.
Look, save the lecture, Professor.
I do not remember making your acquaintance, yet you seem familiar with the title which my earnest but unfortunately too few students have bestowed upon me.
Just psychic, I guess. Hey, what's going on, anyway?
Merely another unfortunate instance of man's inhumanity to man.
Will you skip the double talk? Hey, does Alice Chambers live in this rooming house?
A very profound question, my friend.
What's so profound about it?
A question which has occupied the minds of philosophers and theologians for centuries. Whither doth the soul take flight when the body...
Soul? Body? Hey, wait a minute. What are you talking about?
This Alice Chambers...
What about her?
It would appear that at some time during the course of the night, she was murdered.
So all of a sudden, the trail's heating up fast. Now I know my hunch was right, that the trunk is pretty important. That means just one thing. A false bottom and in the secret compartment, the plans for the buzz bomb. I shove past the professor into the rooming house and check with the police. We give Alice Chambers' room a fast frisk, but no trunk. That puts me right back where I started from, which is nowhere. I turn to leave, but out in the hall, I spot the professor, toga and all, heading for the next room. I catch up with him at the door.
Ah, my friend of the morbid curiosity.
Yeah, and speaking of same, I noticed you were right there in the crowd taking it all in, Professor.
I, sir, am a spectator of life.
You live here next door to Alice Chambers' room, huh?
As you see. It is an humble abode, but it serves me. After all, life is of the mind, not...
Yeah. Look, I'd like a little information.
You have indeed come to the right man, my friend.
Oh?
Yes. To some, it is given to build things. To others, it is given to tear them down. But to me has been granted the highest function, that of spreading
you
a little...
You couldn't have used a better word, Professor.
Sir?
Oh, skip it.
Yes. As I was saying, if I can but momentarily pierce the black cloud of ignorance with the pure light of knowledge, then I feel that this humble life shall not have been lived in vain.
Then how about piercing my ignorance?
If it were not for one thing, I would be delighted, sir.
Oh, what do you mean?
Well, I, unfortunately, suffer from a delicate condition of the throat. To impart information, I am required to speak at length. This has a tendency to dry out the sensitive throat membranes, and thus I get it.
Okay. Is there a bar around here?
Strange that you should ask, because there does happen to be a delightful place but a few paces down the block, a haven where the weary traveler may find refuge and refreshment.
Well, that's the fanciest description of a saloon I've ever heard. But come on, let's go.
I'm afraid that is quite impossible at the moment, my friend.
What? Now, look.
Indeed, for me to stir from this very spot at the moment would be to defy various laws of physics. And, of course, there is the matter of modesty also.
Modesty? Look, what are you talking about? Boil it down, will you?
Very well. To reduce it to the vernacular, you are standing on my toga.
So... this is the quiet haven for the weary traveler, huh?
Is it not delightful?
Professor, I've got to hand it to you. You've got a great imagination. Now, look, are your tonsils oiled up enough so you can tell me a few things?
I shall strive bravely. Between libations, of course. What would you like to know?
Did Alice Chambers have a visitor last night?
Yes.
What time?
Shortly after dinner.
Did you see him go into her room?
In a manner of speaking, yes.
You knew him?
Quite well.
Well, who was it?
Myself.
What?
It was my custom to call on her to exchange a few pleasantries at the close of the day.
Oh, great. Now, look, that's not what I mean. Did you see anybody else near her room?
No.
Well, I guess that's that.
Of course, the rather questionable-looking ex-ophthalmic individual who asked me for directions to a room later in the evening might have been somebody who would...
Well, wait a minute. Let's have that again.
I was taking my usual evening stroll, a short ex-ophthalmic...
Oh, reduce it to the vernacular, will you?
Very well. His eyes protruded slightly.
Oh. Could be the same button-eyed gent who slugged Freilich's cousin Julius Sachs.
Freilich? Julius Sachs? I'm afraid I've not had the pleasure of
Skip
either
it.
Of these.
So Button Eyes was trying to find Alice Chambers. Looked like he found her all right and killed her. Well, that still doesn't help me much. He obviously got the trunk, so...
Trunk? What trunk?
It used to belong to a gent named Frelick. His cousin Julia sold it to a junk dealer who peddled it to Alice Chambers. And now 5 will get you 10, Button Eyes has it, and I'm too late.
Oh, but I assure you, that is quite impossible.
What do you mean?
Well, it is a well-established law of physics that an object cannot be in two places at once.
I still don't get you.
How could your ex-ophthalmic friend have possession of the trunk when Alice Chambers sold it 5 days ago?
Sold it? You know, Professor, trying to get information out of you is like riding the merry-go-round. I have to go 3 laps each time before I grab the brass ring.
A colorful analogy.
Who'd Alice sell it to?
A friend of hers, a dancer named Yvette.
Ballet dancer?
In a manner of speaking.
You know where Yvette is?
I do.
Good. Give me her address. I'll run over and talk to her.
Oh, but I fear that would be quite impossible. To run over and talk to Yvette would be to defy several laws of gravity.
Now, don't start that again. Where is Yvette?
4 days ago, she left for London.
London? Oh, brother. This is really turning into an obstacle race. Okay, Professor, thanks. We finally made it.
The pleasure was all mine, sir. It has been a most stimulating conversation. I hope that we may look forward to another one.
Sure, sure. Sometime when I've got 3 hours to kill and I want to find out what day it is, I'll be around. I grab the next plane for London. When I arrive, I check the newspapers and finally find the name of the theater where Yvette is dancing. It's in the seamy section of the city, and when I get inside, I realize why the professor said she was a ballet dancer in a manner of speaking. I slip around backstage while she's doing her dance and find her dressing room, but there's no trunk. So it looks like Button Eyes is still ahead of me. I turn to go out, then I see something hurtling through the air at me. A flat iron. I drop to one knee and it sails past me into the mirror. Hey.
Hey yourself.
Ah, hello, Yvette.
What is this, Grand Central Station?
I'm sorry to barge into your dressing room like this, but
look, I'm getting a little tired of this routine.
What?
Twice already today there have been guys snooping around my room.
Twice?
Yeah.
Wait, was one of them a short guy with button eyes?
I don't know. I didn't get a decent look at either of them. But if they're friends of yours, you tell them for me that I
they're
don't like
They're not exactly friends of mine, Yvette. Here, you'd better take a look at my credentials.
Oh, so you're a government agent, hmm? But I still don't see why you're snooping around my dressing room.
I'm looking for the trunk Alice Chambers sold you back in the States last week.
Oh, that. I lent it to Joe Feeney the night before last.
Whoever he is.
Oh, he's my boyfriend. He's with the Flying Feenies, acrobats.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. Well, where are they acrobating now?
Denmark.
Oh, brother. This trunk has really got legs.
Thanks. What's with the trunk anyway?
Look. The junk dealer back in New York told me that he'd had 2 keys made for the trunk.
Yeah, Alice gave me both of them when she sold me the trunk.
You still got them?
Sure, one of them. I gave the other one to Joe when I lent him the trunk.
Well, I guess my next stop is the Flying Feenies in Denmark. Now, look, these 2 characters that you saw snooping around your dressing room earlier...
Yeah?
You think they would have any way of knowing that the trunk is in Denmark now?
How could they if I don't even know them or know who they are?
Well, then it looks like I'm one jump ahead of Button Eyes for a change, but I still don't get who the other snooper could be.
Well, I still don't get what's so hot about that trunk.
Hold it.
What's the matter?
Quiet. What stopped me is a slight sound outside the dressing room. I ease over to the door and jerk it open. Then I spot a little guy scrambling away. There's enough light to tell me it's Button Eyes. I take after him. But he pops behind some of the flats backstage, and when I get there, he's gone. I scour the whole backstage area, but there's no sight of him. Finally, I give up, start heading back to Yvette's dressing room, and then suddenly I hear something swishing through the air. I look up. A sandbag is hurtling down at me. I dive to one side, but it hits me. A glancing blow on the side of the head sends me down for the count.
Listening to Dangerous Assignment, starring Brian Donlevy as Steve Mitchell.
Steve.
Oh.
Oh, Steve.
What? Oh, is that?
Oh, Steve, you're lucky.
You want to bet?
Oh, if that sandbag had hit you square.
Yeah, the way my head feels right now, it couldn't have made much difference, believe me.
The guy you were chasing got away, hmm?
Yeah, he's got a head start on me again.
Oh.
Incidentally, you mind telling me where you were when that sandbag dropped on me?
Oh, in my dressing room.
You sure about that?
Of course I'm sure. Why?
Oh, skip it. Brother, This head of mine will probably be throbbing louder than the engines on that plane.
What plane?
The one I'm taking to Denmark to talk to the flying Feenies.
Nah, the flying Feenies. This is an act. It is a catastrophe.
So their act doesn't stop the show. Look, all I know is that when I arrived here in Denmark, I learned that you'd booked them here at your theater, and I want to talk to them.
You are wrong when you say their act does not stop the show, Mr. Mitchell. It stopped mine cold. With the flying Feenies, I could not draw flies.
I still want to talk to... Hey, wait a minute. Are you trying to say that they're not here anymore?
They lasted just one performance. Then I gave them, as you say, the hammer.
Oh, great. So now I'm on the merry-go-round again. You wouldn't happen to know where they're playing now.
Such an act as this, you would not peddle to your worst enemy.
So?
So I peddle them to my worst enemy.
Who?
Max Gruber. He runs a traveling carnival. I have never forgotten the so-called talking dog he booked here once.
Where is his carnival now?
Somewhere in Holland, I think, if the flying Feenies haven't put him out of business yet.
So I hop down to Holland. So far, this deal's been strictly a six-day bicycle race, with Button Eyes always one lap ahead of me. Now, I've got somebody else to worry about, the other guy that Yvette said was snooping around in her dressing room in London. I start checking in Holland for the Feenies, and at this point, it wouldn't surprise me to see him swinging on the nearest windmill. Well, 4 hours later, I locate the traveling carnival in Rotterdam. I find their tent, and I go inside, and there at last are the flying Feenies in front of me, racked up in a pyramid, practicing their act.
Hi.
Quite a pyramid. Which one of you is Joe Feeney?
I am. Here on the bottom. Hey, Henry, that's my backbone.
So what do you want from me?
So get up on my shoulder a little. What can I do for you?
My name's Mitchell, a government agent from the States. Where's that trunk you borrowed from Yvette in London? I don't see it around this tent anywhere.
It's over at the hotel room, the Vorling.
Have you got a key to the trunk?
Sure, right here in my pocket. Yeah, I'll get it.
Hey,
right.
Joe, I'm leaving.
I'm sorry, gentlemen. I step over the sprawling Feenies and head to their hotel room in town. The room is dark. I start to search for the light switch, but before I can make it, something awfully hard connects over my left ear. And for the second time in 24 hours, I take a dive.
Oh. How about this character? He wants to come over the room to look at the trunk, so I let him, and what happens?
Oh, Joe Feeney.
I thought there was something fishy about him in London, Joe.
Hey, Yvette.
Yeah.
Hey, what are you doing here in Holland?
I decided to come over and soup up the act a little.
Pretty convenient time for you to arrive.
Well, what do you mean?
This is the second time I've gotten conked on the head, and both times when I come out of it, there's little Yvette.
Hey, look, don't change the subject, buddy. If you got any private little murders to commit, that's your business. But I don't like you using my room for them.
Murders? What are you talking about?
For instance, that corpse over there in the corner.
Huh? Hey, wait. So, I finally caught up with Button Eyes. And from the looks of that knife in his back, I'd say I was about 4 inches too late.
Like I say, buddy, if you had it in for the guy, well and good. But...
Just hold it a minute, buddy. I don't see that trunk in this room anywhere.
I should be in the closet.
Hmm. Yeah, here it is, all right. But I'm too late again. The trunk's open and empty, including the false bottom.
False bottom? What are you talking about?
That surprise you, Yvette?
Why shouldn't it?
Hey, look, I don't know what this is all about.
Joe,
but...
did you keep this trunk locked?
Why, yeah.
Well, what's the matter?
If the lock on this trunk had been picked, there'd probably be a few small scratches on the metal around it.
So?
So there aren't any scratches. That means the trunk was probably opened with a key.
What are you getting at?
I'll start from the beginning, Yvette. Button Eyes was after the trunk right from the start. He knew what was in that false bottom. But it's beginning to look right now like somebody else has dealt himself or herself into the deal along the way.
Look.
Somebody who figured that whatever was in the trunk must be pretty valuable.
I still don't see what that's got to do with the keys.
I'm coming to that, Feeney. This trunk originally belonged to a gent named Freilich. His cousin Julius Sachs lost the key in New York, so he sold the trunk to a junk dealer who had two more keys made. Alice Chambers gave you both keys when she sold you the trunk, Yvette.
Sure she did, but...
Joe here gave me one of the keys a little while ago. But you've still got the other key, and that sort of puts the finger on
you. Now, wait a minute.
Now, look, buddy. Yvette couldn't have killed this guy. She was with me when we discovered you here on the floor just now.
Well, the two of you could be working together.
You know, you're talking like you've got a hole in your head. I told you there was a second guy snooping around my dressing room in London. He's probably the one you're after.
Yeah, you sure there was a second guy, Yvette?
Yeah.
Or did you dream up that story for a good cover?
Now, look. I heard in London that Joe and his act weren't doing so hot. So I came over here to join him, figuring maybe I could help. As soon as my plane landed, I came right here to the hotel. Then I ran into Joe in the lobby just as he was coming upstairs to the room. So, even if I knew what this was all about, I couldn't have had time to knife that guy and take whatever was in the bottom of that trunk.
Okay, Yvette, maybe you're telling me the truth and maybe you're lying. Right now, I'm going to find out which. I pick up the phone and check with the airport and the desk clerk downstairs, and my case against Yvette falls right on its face. She didn't get to the hotel until after I'd gotten hit over the head, and the same holds true for Joe Feeney, too, so now I'm fresh out of leads. Then a wild idea hits me. I start thinking of a character back in New York. I put through a call to the commissioner back in the States and tell him what I want him to check. A half hour later, he calls me back, and what he says doesn't surprise me.
Looks like you had the right hunch, Steve. We found out that he left for Europe right after you did. Looks like he's been on your tail all the way.
Yeah, he finally caught up with me and Button Eyes here in the hotel room.
You think he's got the buzz bomb plans now, Steve?
Five will get you 10, he has.
Any idea where he is?
Probably waiting for the next plane out of here. See you later, Commissioner. Joe, you got a car outside?
Yeah.
Warm it up. I'm going to call the airport to check on some departing planes.
Are you going somewhere?
No, and I want to make sure that somebody else isn't either.
Mitchell, there's a plane over there getting ready to take off.
Yeah, that's probably the one I'm after. Thanks for the lift, Joe. Hey, passenger's still getting on.
Looking for me, Mitchell?
What? Ah, hello, Julius. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I was.
I thought you might be, so it seemed better for me to find you. I feel much safer with my gun in your bag.
Needless to say, you've got those buzz bomb plans in your satchel there.
But of course, come on.
Where to?
On the corner of the building.
Okay. Sure all figures, Julius. You didn't realize your cousin's trunk was so valuable until Button Eyes beat you up trying to find out where it was. Then you decided to follow it up yourself. You caught up with Button Eyes in the hotel room and killed him?
And I'm quite certain these plans I took from the trunk can be sold to interested parties at a very fat price. Here, this is far enough, Mitchell. In the shadows now, and with the noise of the airplane engines, I doubt that one small shot from this automatic will even be heard.
It was a key that pegged you, Julius. Yvette had one, I had the other. Then I remembered you telling me that you'd lost the original key.
By that time, I had also realized the trunk must be of considerable value, Mitchell. You should hardly expect me to reveal that I still have another key. Would
hardly,
you?
Hardly, Julius.
Mitchell, my plane is taking off momentarily. Now, regret that I must terminate our little conversation right now.
His gun jams harder against my back, and I know that he's going to pull the trigger any second now. Then I remember what he said a minute ago. The gun is an automatic. That gives me an idea, a real long shot, but my only chance. Suddenly, I throw my weight backward, driving him against the wall. Behind him, the gun is wedged between my back and his chest. I strain backward, keeping the pressure on the muzzle with my back. An automatic won't fire when the slide is pushed back.
Get out away from me, Mitchell!
Oh, tries to shove me forward, but I brace myself. I know that the instant the pressure is taken off the gun, it'll fire. I start sweating. I can't keep the pressure on much longer. My feet are slipping on the concrete. Suddenly, I raise one of them and let him have a heel in the shin. He relaxes his hold on the gun for an instant, just long enough. I bend over, reach back between my legs, grab his foot, and yank it forward. The slug whistles over my back, and Julius' head plunks back into the wall. I'll take the gun now, Julius.
Oh,
hand the satchel.
My head.
Yeah, I guess that wall must be pretty hard, all right, but you've got no kicks coming.
What do you mean?
After all, you had me bucking a stone wall all the way in this deal. I'm just returning the compliment the hard way.
Dangerous Assignment, starring Brian Donlevy as Steve Mitchell, is written by Bob Reif and Adrian Jondo, with music by Robert Armbruster, and is produced and directed by Bill Karn. Be with us again next week at this same time when Brian Donlevy, starring in the role of Steve Mitchell, will embark on another Dangerous Assignment. Dangerous Assignment came to you from Hollywood. For more mysteries, stay tuned for The Man Called X on NBC.
The next half hour will be taken up by a pleasant little comedy called The Halls of Ivy. Starring Ronald and Benita Coleman, this is the football coach at Ivy from 1951.
Transcribed.
Good evening. This is Ronald Coleman, inviting you to join Mrs. Coleman and me for the next half hour when our sponsor, the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, presents the Halls of Ivy.
If you like good beer, do as millions of people are doing all over the country. Ask for Schlitz, the beer that made Milwaukee famous. Schlitz tastes so good to so many people that it's the largest selling beer in America. It has to be fine to be first. And now, the Halls of Ivy.
That surround us here today.
Welcome again to Ivy. Ivy College, that is, in the town of Ivy, USA. It's one of those nights that makes home a real haven. Dr. William Todhunter Hall, president of Ivy, is thankful to be home at last after a dinner meeting of the board to don his dressing gown and slippers and join his wife, Victoria, before the fireplace.
Ah, that's better. Now, blow, winds, and crack your cheeks. Rage, blow. You cataracts and hurricanes, spout till you have drenched our steeple.
We could use a couple more shingles in our steeple. I've got three pans catching the water in the kitchen. Well, did you have a boisterous evening with the boys?
Rather, let us say, a boring meeting with the board. All their dinner meetings follow the same revolting pattern. First, the preliminary and quite false inquiry into one another's health, with no one listening to the answers. Then, a few firm opinions of our national administration, and then a fruit cocktail.
Ah, the good old fruit cocktail, without which any dinner party would be a much happier one.
Oh, it's not the fruit cocktail I object to. In fact, I rather like it. No, it's that inevitable, omnipresent, unavoidable, and uninspired one half of a maraschino cherry. Why a half? Can't anyone afford a whole maraschino cherry? Now, the fruity resources of this plundered planet so far reduced...
It's a matter of stability, darling. Yes. You know, whole ones roll around. A half cherry stays put.
I know, but I couldn't keep my mind on the business side.
Why not?
That half of a cherry. I counted the members present. Nine of us. Nine half cherries, or four and a half cherries, accounted for. Where was the other half of a cherry? What are they saving it for? A fruitcake? Oh, do they think that I'll take it. That'll be something Wellman just remembered he should have said at the meeting, but didn't. Hello? Dr. Hall speaking.
Evening, Dr. Hall. This is Warren.
Oh, good evening, Professor. How are you?
Satisfactory. Say, maybe you can do me a favor. You know a passage from Santa Anna about life flowing and stuff, which begins, seeds, blood, and tears are liquid?
It's vaguely familiar.
Have you got Santa Anna in your house?
Yes, I'm sure there's one tucked away in the library.
Good. Some light-fingered member of the Literati borrowed mine. I don't remember who. I'd like the complete passage from my 8 o'clock class tomorrow morning. You mind if I totter over and pick up your copy?
Well, I'd be delighted to see you, Professor, but in a storm like this, only the wayward daughters of stern fathers are being driven out. But if you want to hold on a minute, I'll read the passage to you.
Fine, if it's not too much bother.
Not at all, just hold on.
I'll talk to him while you hunt, Toddy. He's my oldest boyfriend.
Good, Vicky.
Hello, Professor Warren.
Why, good evening, Mrs. Hall.
Where have you been hiding? You promised to drop by and see us during the holidays. Now, I've got a lot of blank paragraphs in my diary.
Oh, my apologies, Mrs. Hall. But you see, I usually crawl into solitude on such occasions. Christmas, I hang up an old sock and put a horn in it, which I take out on New Year's Eve. At the stroke of midnight, I look in the mirror and blow one toot at myself and go to bed.
Well, sometimes you breed over here. I never heard you blow your own horn, Professor.
Well, you can put that down to natural shyness and shortness of wind, lady. Not to any lack of conceit. Otherwise,
Mickey.
I wouldn't even...
Oh, excuse me, Professor. Yes, Toddy?
Have you seen Santayana lately?
What? No, dear. We'll call you back, Professor Warren.
All right.
Yes, there's a philosopher named Santayana lost in our library, and we're forming a party.
All right, bye.
Goodbye.
Here we are. Oh, did you hang up? I just found it.
Oh.
Now, if I can locate that passage, it must be in the essay on... Let me see some... Oh, here. Here it is. Now, what's his phone number? Well, that's odd. I've called him up often enough.
Well, I'll look it up.
Wait. Cedar 2655. No, that doesn't sound like it. I remember that much too easily. It must be wrong.
Of course, I know it's ridiculous. And it's the last thing anybody would ever be caught at. And I'm a flighty woman even to suggest it. But how about trying the phone book?
No, not for Warren. He'd insist on being unlisted if he were the head of the fire department.
Well, let's find out. I like to look through the phone directory anyway. The one book I can lay down any time without wondering what happens next. Warpack. Here we are, Warren. Warren, is it Joseph?
Yeah, that's right, Joseph Warren.
So he isn't listed, nay. Yes, he is. Joseph Warren. Cedar, 7211.
Ah, good. Thank you, darling. Cedar. What was that? Cedar what?
Oh, Toddy. Now... Warnock, Warpack, Warren, it's all the way through. It's Cedar. Seven.
Seven.
Two.
Two.
One.
Hello?
Oh.
Sorry to have kept you waiting. Have you got a pencil handy?
Sure, shoot.
All right, here it is. Seeds, blood, and tears are liquid. Nothing else is so poignant as what passes and flows, like music and love.
Huh?
And if this irreparable fluidity is sad, anything stark and arrested is sadder. Life is compelled to flow, and things must flow with it. Or, like Lot's wife, in the petrified gesture of refusal, remain to mock their own hopes. That's what you wanted, isn't it?
Lot's wife. Hey, listen, Mac. I'll go along with a gag any time, but I'm rushed tonight, see? There's six customers waiting and six Warren burgers on the griddle.
Warren burgers? To whom am I talking?
This is Joe Warren's diner. If you won't come to us, we'll come to you. Right within a bun. Now, what'll you have?
I'm sorry. Nothing tonight, thank you.
Wrong, Warren.
Yes, this one sells something called Warren Burgers. A banquet in a bun. I'll wager there's not half a maraschino cherry within sneering distance.
Sounds interesting. I'm sorry you didn't order a couple.
Well, I thought of it, believe me. But first things first, darling. What is Professor Warren's phone number?
Oh, it must be somewhere in your desk. Let's look now.
Cedar. I'm sure it was cedar. Or was it walnut? Or maple? Was it evergreen or deciduous?
Here's your address book. RSTUVW. Professor J. Warren, 82, Piazza Barberini, Rome, Italy.
Oh, now, Vic. That's a leftover from Warren's sabbatical leave in 1937. Now, wait. Here's a... I'm up. I'll go. Professor Warren.
Evening, Dr. Hall, Mrs. Hall.
Oh, come in, Professor. You must be frozen.
In the recent jargon of our undergraduates, baby, it's cold outside. Thank you. We'll sit down.
Well, I'm sorry you had to walk over in this weather, Professor. I was trying to get you on the phone.
Yes, I know. You see, Burgess always takes over the moment I hang up. You should see my phone bill. You'd think I was the voice of America.
Burgess, who's he?
He's a her.
Oh.
It's Miss Burgess. She's my housekeeper. I'm willing her to the Smithsonian Institute. They'll hang her up on the ceiling under the port wing of the Spirit of St. Louis. Did you find the Santa Ana?
Yes, I did, and the quotation.
Good, that's worth two blocks in a blizzard.
Well, now that you're here, take off your coat and mittens and stay a while.
Thank you, Mrs. Hall. Wanted to speak to you too anyway. You busy Saturday night?
No, I don't think so, are we, Vicky?
Well, the Browning Society wanted you to read for them.
Let them get Browning. They've had guest speakers deader than he is.
Well, it appears we have a free evening.
Good. I thought we might have a quiet dinner, just the three of us, at Tony's out on the River Road. You know, I'm leaving Ivy next month.
Leaving? Oh, William, you didn't tell me.
Well, I was hoping he wouldn't. I've made him an offer to stay on.
Mrs. Hall, I am superannuated. In Navy parlance, I'm to be decommissioned, coated with cosmoline, and nudged up the river to join the rest of the mothball fleet. I am disqualified because of old age.
Oh, now, you know it's not a question of disqualification, Professor. The retirement age is automatic. It's certainly wrong in your case, but regulations are never made for exceptions.
And you're always an exception, aren't you, Professor Warren? Why, you've built quite a reputation on it.
Mrs. Hall, I've always believed that if you travel with the crowd, you're liable to get your mind picked. But I think this retirement thing might be a good idea in my case. Out of sheer inertia, I'd probably have stayed on here till it dried up and blew around the campus, dirtying the front steps of Clarence Wellman Hall on rainy afternoons.
Well, in that case, there would be more brains outside than inside. Now, what are your plans, Professor?
Nothing definite. Might go to Tibet.
Tibet?
That forbidden land where the foreign devil is not permitted to set foot, unless he is one of 4,000 writers with camera and ballpoint pen who goes home and writes a book on how impossible it would be for anybody else to do what he did.
Well, personally, I wouldn't go any place I had to get to on a high llama.
Don't you mean a low llama, Vicky? You visit the high one.
Oh.
Before you ride off into the sunset, Professor, I want to ask a favor. You will help Professor Dickinson get acquainted with your department, won't you? You know, he's just getting settled, and there'll be a lot you can tell him.
Yes, there's plenty I could tell Professor Dickinson, if he'd listen. But he's not interested in my ideas, and frankly, I don't like his either.
Well, since you put it that way, frankly, perhaps it's just as well to skip it.
It is just as well. We'd wind up behind the science building at dawn. Pistols for two and breakfast for one. I've taken up enough of your evening. Just hand me my coat and mittens, and I'll be on my way.
Here you are.
Thank you. No, no, Mrs. Hall, don't come to the door. You'll freeze. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, Professor Warren.
Don't forget about Saturday, Doctor, about 7.
Oh, thanks very much. We'll be looking forward to it.
Good night.
Good night.
I love that man, but he never stays put. He just gets started talking, and then he pops up and runs off.
Now, you know, I never dreamt it was possible that Warren could reconcile himself to retirement so easily. He's an old war horse, and I thought he'd die rather than leave his stable.
Oh, Toddy, here's the Santayana. He's forgotten to take it.
Oh, you better give it to me. I'll drop it by his house. Now, where did I put my overshoes?
Oh, you're not going out in this weather.
Yes, I am. I've been thinking seriously about those banquets on buns, those Warren burgers. And I've come to a decision.
Oh, well, but that's quite different. Make it do with everything, darling. You hurry back. So, you forgot your key again, huh?
I beg your pardon?
Oh, I thought it was the professor. Who is it?
Isn't Professor Warren in?
You haven't answered my question yet. Who are you?
Well, I'm Dr. Hall, Miss Burgess.
Oh, that's different. I know you. Come in, doctor. I thought the professor was over to your house.
Well, he was. I thought he was coming back here.
Oh, that man out gallivanting around the town for half the night again. He'll catch his death. For the last month, he's been wandering around Ivy at all hours of the night like he'd never seen it before.
Ah, Professor Warren has a deep affection for Ivy.
Then why are you throwing him out?
Good heavens, we're not throwing him out, Miss Burgess. None of us want to see him go. But after all, how can you blame him for wanting to travel and see some of the world now that he has the freedom to do so?
See the world? Why, he hasn't even got bus fare from here to Kansas City.
He hasn't? Well, since you know so much about him, perhaps you can tell me what his real plans are.
He's moving in with his sister and her no-good husband up at Rock County. He's got no place else to go. Do you think he's too old for his job, too?
No. He's merely too old for our regulations. Well, that needn't mean the end of things. There's a place for him here at Ivy. He can be a visiting professor as long as he'll stay. But you know as well as we do that nobody's ever been able to force him to do anything. It must be his choice.
Well, I know one thing. He can't just sit here looking out the window at the cemetery where he'll be buried someday. Only he won't be buried. Says he wants to be cremated in Emerson Hall.
Cremated in Emerson Hall?
Yes. Oh. Says it'll be the first time he was ever warm in that building.
When there's beer on your mind, your best thought is Schlitz, the beer that made Milwaukee famous. More people like the taste of Schlitz than any other beer. That's why Schlitz is the largest selling beer in America.
It was Goethe, the great poet of a bygone day, who said, "One ought, every day at least, to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and, if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words." Taking our cue from Mr. Goethe, let's speak a few reasonable words on the subject of beer. In beer, as in a poem, a picture, or a song, there can be no substitute for quality. And there can be no higher tribute to the quality of Schlitz beer than this. So many people like the taste of Schlitz so well that they've made it the largest selling beer in America. Yes, the taste of Schlitz is winning more and more new friends every day. So if it's been some time since you've tasted Schlitz beer, you owe yourself that pleasure again. Next time, ask for Schlitz, the beer that made Milwaukee famous. Then you too will discover it has to be fine to be first.
That's around us here today.
As we return to Ivy, Dr. and Mrs. Hall are the dinner guests of Professor Warren at a roadhouse a few miles outside of town.
How am I doing, Mrs. Hall? Bet you didn't know I danced so divinely, did you?
Well, this is the first chance you've given me to find out.
Well, it's not something I usually talk about. But I once wanted to be a ballet dancer. Twinkle Toes Warren, the boy in the velvet pants.
You paint a lovely picture. What stopped you?
Too many feet. In a more rational moment, I swapped my patent leather pumps for a set of Plutarch.
Oh, what happened to the boy who got the pumps?
He owns a filling station outside of Baltimore. That's fate, I guess. If you're born to the pumps, you're going to get them. Oh, say, I'm sorry that's over. Dibs on the next waltz, Mrs. Hall.
By all odds, the most talented couple on the floor.
There was a time, Dr. Hall, when Irene Castle was my favorite dancer. But in her foxiest trot days, she couldn't hold a candle to your wife.
Oh, Irene Castle, how long ago was that?
Oh, don't ask me for any contemporary dates, Mrs. Hall. Dates, I mean. If you asked me for those of Constantine and Theodosius, I could give them to you. But as far as my own personal chronicle goes, I don't even know what year I was born.
What you do? Well, wait a minute. Then how do you know you're 65?
I don't. Never had a birth certificate. Or if I did, I lost it. During the First World War, when I had to produce one, I discovered that the town hall of Centerville, Ohio, had long since burned down. So I just picked a good round birth year, and now I'm stuck with it. Looks like it was not a winning number either.
Oh, I'm not so sure. Professor, you've just set your clock back.
Hmm?
I'll take this up with the Board of Governors tomorrow. For all anybody knows, you're a boy of 21.
Well, thanks, Doctor. Thank you very much, but it's no good. I don't think I'd enjoy borrowed time.
Time is community property. Help yourself.
No, I appreciate your good intentions, but you don't know how well off you're going to be without me. This Professor Dickinson, there's a boy you won't have any trouble with. He'll go to all the teas, make all the proper little speeches, be nice to all the right people.
All the social amenities here are well enough taken care of, but the heart of Ivy is the classroom. And that's where your heart has always been.
Right now, my heart's in the Highlands.
Boy, you told us you were going to Mexico City or all points south.
Well, I've changed my plans again. I've decided to go down to Rio first. Thought I might get myself a cabana on the beach and just bask in the sun. Funny thing, I don't believe I've ever basked.
Well, I admit the prospect is very attractive with all the snow we've had this winter.
Well, when you're approaching winter yourself, that's the time you start looking for summer everywhere. That's why I'm heading south. I'm a fine host, spending the whole evening talking about myself. Here, let me fill your glasses. It's milk from contented vineyards.
Thank you.
Well, here's a toast. Courtesy of Thoreau. To him whose elastic and vigorous thought keeps pace with the sun, the day is a perpetual morning.
Good morning, everybody. Bottoms up. Dr. Hall, may I please have this dance?
Of course, darling. Will you excuse us, Professor?
Well, this one you may have, Doctor. But remember, the waltz is mine.
Toddy, we can't let him leave Ivy.
Yes, but how to make him stay?
Yes, if only he weren't being so gay about it all. It'd be much more like him to get into a fury at you and Ivy and everybody letting him go.
We don't want to let him go. We're only... Vicky, that's the answer. You've given me the only good idea I've had all day. You think they'd throw us out if I kissed you?
Well, if they do, you can kiss me again on the sidewalk.
Excuse me, Professor. I'm on the phone, Vicky. Yes, go ahead, Professor Dickinson. And what did he say? He did? Well, so far, so good. You've been very cooperative, Professor, and we're all obliged to you. As long as you're willing to be the heavy, I think we can make Professor Warren see the light. Yes, yes, I'll let you know. Goodbye. Vicky, I think we're in for a big win.
Oh, that's what we wanted, wasn't it? But we still don't know which way it's going to blow.
Dickinson's already got the first blast, and it came from the expected direction. He said it was a real twister.
Mm. Oh, by the way, darling, you wanted me to remind you. Did you send the telegram?
Which one?
For the 100th anniversary of Northwestern University.
Oh, yes, I sent one to Rocky Miller and one to President Daniel Marsh of Boston University. It's his silver anniversary and he's retiring.
What'd you say? Did you quote Washington's farewell to his men? Quote, so long, fellas, unquote.
No. I said, and I quote, Dear Dan, hail and farewell on your silver anniversary. Expect you to be snapped up immediately by private industry as the inventor of a silver product that can never be tarnished. Warmest regards, Bill Hall.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. I'll get it. Yes?
Good morning. I'd like to see the president. I'm Miss Burgess. You're Mrs. Hall. Pleased to meet you. Heard a lot about you. All good.
William, there's someone here.
Oh, Miss Burgess. Well, good morning. Won't you sit down?
I've just come over to let you know that the professor's leaving on the 3 o'clock train today. You've got to stop him.
Miss Burgess, that's exactly what we're hoping to do.
Hope never stopped a railway train. Are you just going to sit back here and do nothing?
Well, Professor Warren has an excellent mind of his own. And now we'll undoubtedly hear him speak a piece of that mind.
You mean he's here?
Unless the wind's changed, he's at the door right now.
Vicky, you and Mrs. Burgess run for cover.
Yes, come into the kitchen with me until the weather clears up. It's just a local disturbance.
Well, Professor Warren, come in.
You might as well know it, Dr. Hall. I have a ticket on the 3 o'clock train out of here today. But something happened this morning. A thing called Dickinson.
No, something happened to Professor Dickinson?
Something happened? The man's lost his mind. Have you any idea what that lemonhead is planning to do to my history department?
Yes, I'm aware of his plan.
You're not going to let him get away with it.
I don't understand what you mean. I have the highest esteem for Professor Dickinson, both as a scholar and as an administrator.
Oh, you have you?
Uh-huh.
Well, that's your job, I guess. You got to please everybody. Professional etiquette. Well, I don't work here anymore, and I can speak my mind. If that man goes ahead with what he's doing, well, that's the end.
If you think it's that serious, Professor, I think you should give me more specific reasons.
He's chopping the whole curriculum up into little bitty pieces. There isn't one single class to put them all together so they make any sense. What's history? History is continuity. Some people claim that history is a bunch of lies agreed upon, and maybe it is. But even so, without continuity, without relevance, history is a bunch of dates on cornerstones and names on tombstones.
Oh, yes, 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 I know that, Professor, and I don't believe Dickinson would have any quarrel with it.
And why hasn't he scheduled at least one class on the meaning and interpretation of history?
Oh, as I understand it, he is omitting such a class at the present, primarily because there is no one available here to teach it. Accordingly, he is going to concentrate on a more thorough grounding in the basic source material.
Source material, my Aunt Mabel's bustle. I know what he's really up to. He's a Toynbee man. Well, I'm not.
Now, don't sell Toynbee short. He's probably the outstanding historian of our time.
I didn't say he wasn't any good. Just don't agree with him. And I'd hate to see Ivy's history department represent only one point of view. That's not learning, that's memorizing.
Well, I don't want any department at Ivy to present only one point of view.
Well.
However, if there is no one here to replace you and your approach, I can't expect him to teach history your way.
Well, he's got three men in that department that could take over.
They already have assignments.
Oh, they have.
Uh-huh.
So Dickinson is going to muzzle them with that source material nonsense of his. You think I'd enjoy basking on the beach at Rio knowing this was going on? That the kids here were only getting one side of a subject? Your offer still go?
Of course. I've never withdrawn it.
I can stay on? No permanent status? No strings attached?
That's right.
All right, then, I'm back.
Welcome home, my friend. I'll tell Dickinson to schedule your course, but naturally, I won't say anything about your opinion of his
ideas.
You
won't have to. He knows him. Now I'm off. Got to beat it down at the station and get a refund on my ticket. The fare to South America, you know, is not just coat hangers.
Goodbye, Professor.
So long. Say hello to Mrs. Hall. Last evening was very pleasant. I wish I could say as much for this morning. Dickinson is a lousy dancer.
I couldn't hear everything, Toddy, but he certainly sounded angry.
He got so angry, he decided to stay here at Ivy.
How do you feel?
Ruthless, conniving, despicable, and delighted.
Oh, I can't tell you how glad I am, Doctor. The professor sounded like his old self. He hasn't hollered that loud in a whole year. How'd you ever do it?
Oh, I just went back 65 years in my time machine.
Yes, burned down the city hall in Centerville, Ohio, with all the birth records.
Doctor, for a firebug, you burn a real hot match.
Thank you, Miss Burgess. Officiating at the accouchement of Professor Warren's new birth date makes me feel a little like a statistical midwife, but I'm glad he'll spend his newfound youth with us. It seems, as Sir Walter Raleigh said, that history has triumphed over time.
When there's beer on your mind, your best thought is Schlitz, the beer that made Milwaukee famous. More people like the taste of Schlitz than any other beer. That's why Schlitz is the largest selling beer in America.
Here again are Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
We'll be seeing you next week at this same time at the Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman. The other players were Verna Felton, Arthur Q. Bryan, and Sidney Miller. Tonight's script was written by Barbara and Milton Merlin and Don Quinn. The Halls of Ivy was created by Don Quinn, directed by Nat Wolfe, and presented, transcribed by the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, who invites you to enjoy the Pulitzer Prize Playhouse on television on Friday nights. Ken Carpenter speaking.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.